This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Has come and spoken here in Portland and been on my show one time.
Yeah.
She says the same thing, and she, you know, people don't want to hear this. We don't want to hear that we helped form a government that is filled with really, really bad guys.
Well, her point in, you know, A Woman Amongst Warlords is I was going to point out that people want to know about the women condition in Afghanistan, they should read Malala Joyar. And Malala Joyar's point is, earlier we had one or two enemies. Now we're caught between multiple enemies. The warlords, the Taliban, the Americans, and the Afghan government, you know, plus the traditional, you know, the restrictions and so forth. So the point is that the army, the police force, and the national security forces, like the government structure, are highly fractionalized, fragmented, ethnicized. It's sectarian groups of warlords. This group, this man with this following, that man with that militia.
So with very divided loyalties.
Very divided loyalty. Most of the army, the power really resides now in what used to be the Northern Alliance, which assisted the Americans initially in October 2001.
And had its own very violent history of
It's documented. It's interesting that Human Rights Watch and the Afghan Independent Human Rights Commission did a massive report, an 800-page report on all of the crimes committed from 1977-78 until, say, last year. But the government and the Americans will not allow that report to be published because the report names names. And those names, some of them are now vice presidents, they're ministers, they're governors, they're important people in the military, intelligence, and police, and so forth. So if you look at the profile of these people, I mean, they are essentially criminals.
Yeah, they're hired
guns. Yes,
yeah, hired
that's
armies,
what they are.
Hired
and on top of that, now the Americans will go like the Sons of Iraq. Remember when they bribed villagers to fight? So Americans now are sort of outsourcing the war. In addition to trying to put some kind of an army, police, and intelligence together, they're also hiring just thugs. Country thugs, people who have no work and most people are unemployed, to, say, control your village or fight off the insurgency. And these people have no understanding of the situation, so why people are resisting and who should actually is the enemy and who is not an enemy. So they're creating massive, you know,
very dangerous situation for the
regular
citizen.
Because the Americans, when they leave, if they leave, I would say that's another lie.
So let's move into that, Zahir. Let's talk about troop withdrawals and are we going to leave in 2014? The newspapers are full of this debate. They go, should it be 6,000 troops that are left or 9,000? Mm-hmm. Well, that's a little lower than some people want. They want what Commander Allen wants, between 6,000 and 20,000. And to me, these numbers, this seems like some kind of false game. I mean, they are going to settle on some number and there are competing pressures, but are we really going to leave anyway? I talk about what your conception of what's going to happen.
Well, I'm not the first and only one who believes that the United States will maintain permanent presence in Afghanistan for sure.
We can see the permanent bases that are still being built.
Because my position has been, you know, this terrorism and Taliban extremism, etc., these are simply alibis. These are just excuses to invade and occupy a country and to maintain a base. The real issue is Pipelinistan. It's not Afghanistan.
So talk about that.
Pipelinistan, that is say TAPI, T-A-P-I, that is say the pipeline that is about to begin.
Is it really? It's about ready to open now? It goes from...
The Asian Development Bank has done studies, feasibility studies, estimates, etc. Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, India, and Pakistan have signed agreements and the work on that pipeline, which would connect Turkmenistan,
so it would come
Central
from the
Asia.
North Turkmenistan and then come down through
Western Afghanistan, and then to the port of Gwadar in Pakistan and then to India.
Okay.
What is called the TAPI pipeline. The issue, I think, has been the Caspian Sea. It's It's about oil. It's about gas. It's about uranium. It's about lithium. It's about copper.
You know,
it's
been
gold.
So long since this war started, I actually forgot that that was one of the main motivations, to be honest with you. I mean, I remember the pipeline.
Yes.
I remember us talking about it way back when we first invaded and knowing that that was a source of it. And under Bush, we talked about it. But I haven't heard it talked about in the newspapers or articles or
It has been redacted, even from our public discourse. I mean, hardly anyone. It's like, you know, the West, the United States, NATO, etc., they went there for altruistic reasons. I mean, that's the perception
the
management,
story.
What Petraeus, the disgraced Petraeus, you know, I call him a hustler, sort of a liar.
Well, apparently he is a
war criminal.
Yes.
So in every way.
Yes.
So, well, and General Allen, as you know, the man is no angel either.
And he
so he sends his troops to go fight in Farah, but he's writing between 30 and 40,000 emails in a span of 18 months to one woman.
Well, maybe that, so, you know, maybe that tells you, if we want to talk about the sex obsessions of those generals, maybe that tells you a little bit about, one, the real ethics of them, but two, the strain. I mean, if he's writing that many emails,
that's
that man's
a lot
got
of emails,
compulsive
I would say.
Behavior.
Yeah, well, and it's incredible. And then the Pentagon says there was nothing really improper about it. So anyway, the point is that now we know for a fact that Afghanistan itself is sitting on top of literally gold mines, gold, copper, some of the largest deposits of copper, which the Chinese contracted, you know.
And the lithium. United States has a long history of taking over countries for the copper. Let's talk Chile and Allende.
Yes, we all remember Chile and Allende. And Afghanistan has the second largest deposit, and apparently it's very good quality. And lithium and uranium, but also Afghanistan itself now has, in fact, coal, iron ore, and gas and oil. So, plus, you know, the Central Asia thing. So many, I mean, my position, and I'm not alone, is that the real issue is wars about energy, about resources, about markets, about labor.
It also allows us to surround Iran.
American
presence in Afghanistan
is
the final link that has Iran literally surrounded by U.S. forces in one way or another.
Yes. In fact, one of the largest bases is built in Shindand in Herat province, which is almost right next to Iran, which is to say that one of the reasons the U.S. had given us was that to stabilize the region. In fact, you know, it has destabilized the region.
Well, yes,
because
the whole region is
Iran
on fire.
And Pakistan and Saudi Arabia and all of the stans, Afghanistan's neighbors, are involved up to their neck. As long as the United States, NATO, and the Europeans are there, Iran will not leave Afghanistan alone. Iran, right now, it funds television stations openly. I mean, everyone knows that. They fund radio stations, television stations, candidates, you know.
In
Afghanistan, yes. Because they want to make things different. They trained the Taliban, which they didn't like.
Well, and ethnically, aren't they related to the Pashtun?
No, the Iranians are related more to the Tajiks.
To the Tajiks.
Tajiks.
Right.
And, of course, you know, there are about 15% of the Afghans are Shiites. But the Shiite Sunni, it was not an issue until just the last 3 or 4 years. You know,
which
there
tells
was never
you how
friction.
You can create. You can go in. I thought we saw it in Iraq,
yes,
where people have been living side by side and marrying each other,
yes,
Shiites and Sunnis, and then we can create the rift through these kinds of occupations to the point where then the hatreds grow deep again,
and
you have greater division and instability.
Well, look at the bombings. Every day something happens in Iraq between the Shiites and the Sunnis. It's not that explosive yet, but it's on the verge of explosion. And this has to do in Afghanistan. Because it was never an issue. You were hardly aware of it. People left each other alone. There was no prejudices. There's no persecution and nothing. But now in the last 3 or 4 years, it's sort of beginning to become an issue. And it's mainly due to the American meddling in presence. That's why I say the sooner the Americans and NATO withdraw, but they should be replaced with a UN-sponsored peacekeeping force.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. So if we did, now you talk about, and I wanted us to get to talking about the U.S. anti-war movement, but we won't have time. But you talk about things that the United States should do as it's leaving. And one I really hope that we will pull out more of, but I agree with you. We've built these huge permanent bases, and we're talking about building drone bases in other locations throughout the world, as a matter of fact. And drone bases can be a little bit smaller. And so raging war through our drones and through, you know, commando groups going in, that kind of thing. That's what you envision the U.S. intending for the future of Afghanistan.
And plus a proxy army, which is the Afghan army. I mean, Afghanistan doesn't have a professional army, subscription.
Conscription.
And we pay. So the strategy, I think, is to, quote, reduce the Americans' footprint, the visible part of the military in the occupation. But I have read in many, many sources that more special forces, more CIA, more covert operatives, more drones are going in the other direction. But also there will be more contract.
People
from third country, you know, from Chile,
We will be sending in just full mercenary units.
Just like we will be paying for the Afghan mercenary force, because you can't really call that a professional army. We will be paying them people who really have no loyalty to Afghanistan or the country or this and that. It's just a form of work. So the thing would be, I think, for the Americans to withdraw, but again, to be replaced by a peacekeeping force. But also, I insist that the U.S. NATO should pay reparation to Afghanistan.
Well, and that is, they must. If we're going to have, if this nation has so much of these resources, and yet it has a population that's starving and illiterate, it would be so obvious, if it was a beneficent world, if we really wanted to help, to really begin to call a ceasefire. I think you say that we need to call a ceasefire.
Yes.
And then begin to build schools, cooperatively build schools. I mean, how can there be an educated army? Even if you're doing it to build an educated army, you have to have education. So obviously, we're not going in with those intentions. The intentions are not to help develop a healthy environment in Afghanistan.
Right. I mean, this current year, $120 billion are allocated to the military operation. $1.7 billion, I think, is, quote, to development.
So, and a lot of that development is also more.
Yes. I mean, the thing is to, one, really commit to the balanced development of the country and show that. Education, agriculture, healthcare, energy, etc. And two, to let the dynamics, the political dynamics of the society, to for democracy and democratic forces, progressive forces to emerge, not protect a kleptocracy, a mafiocracy, and a criminal syndicate. Right now, the U.S. presence, the Western presence, is the main obstacle to democratic development, to the progress of women, for example, to justice, to lawful society. I mean, that's how the occupation has become a problem, because you cannot have any movement to make progress, you know. And Afghans have been disabled and marginalized and, you know, terrorized because you have this enormous force that is protecting essentially crime syndicates.
So if you were going to, we've got 1 minute, if you were going to tell the American people something that you would like to have them focus on or pay attention to or do about the situation in Afghanistan, what would that be?
Well, I would like Americans to reflect on how this country has become, it went from a country, a decent country, to becoming an empire. And a global empire, not even a regional, continental
one. I admit I even call it the evil empire.
Yes.
I mean, mind, that's what it is, because what we're doing over there is clearly evil.
I mean,
and
Americans need to learn about their own history. They also need to understand how and why war became a permanent fixture of this culture, in this society, in this economy. And also it means they need to learn to put pressure. I mean, we need to democratize and develop this society so that then we can at least not interfere in other people's businesses, but also for the Americans to have some compassion for the little, you know, Janan. Janan was not alone. Every day people have, and I used to drive by that camp that I think the New York Times is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's toward
huge and sprawling.
Yes, it's toward Kabul University, and you know, to have some compassion, have some feelings, put pressure on politicians, like, and encourage politicians like Senator Merkley, who actually, you know, sponsored the bill about 2 months ago in the Senate, where the Senate voted 62 to about 32 to withdraw earlier than 2014.
That's right. And we should, when our senators do things we like, we should definitely say thank you.
So yes, thank and you, support Senator people Quinn. Like that, you know. And so it's really educating oneself critically about one's own society. Why has this become a problematic society? And think about other people and relate to them as people and human beings with their own interests, with their own fears, their own anxieties, their own shortcomings, and so forth. People who are struggling to just have decent lives and human rights.
Well, thank you so much for joining
You're
me
welcome.
Today. I've been speaking with Dr. Zahair Wahab, a retired emeritus, professor emeritus of Lewis and Clark's Graduate School of Education. We've been talking about his home land, Afghanistan. I want to thank all of you listeners for tuning in to KBOO, and we will move on now to our next show.
Thank you.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Kurt Lauer, a real estate broker with Oregon Realty Company, helping homeowners and home buyers to buy, sell, upgrade, or downsize while keeping your budget in mind. Kurt Lauer can be reached at 503-901-5878 or by email to KURTLAUER at OregonRealty.com.
And good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland, the Thursday morning lineup shaken up just a little bit. We don't have Air Cascadia this morning, but we do have a few things coming up at 11 o'clock this morning on Between the Covers. The guest is Emma Donoghue, author of the acclaimed novel Room and the new collection of short stories Astray. And then at 11, it's Words and Pictures, conversations with pioneering animators and comics artists. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and thanks, members, for your support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Once again, we don't have Chris today, so no Air Cascadia, but we do have Flashpoints. And among other topics today, there will be a feature of an expose on right-wing Weekly Standard editor William Crystal, and that is coming up next on KBOO.
KBOO is proud to be a media sponsor.